Good evening. It's 5 p.m. on Thursday, July 2nd, and you're tuned in to CFRC 101.9 FM, broadcasting from Lower Carruthers Hall on Queen's Campus in Kingston, Ontario. I'm CFRC's broadcast journalist, Christina Laurie, and this is Kingston Currents, your weekly roundup of the latest Limestone local news. CFRC's news programming is brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcast, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. Coming up in today's episode, an update on the future of three city rec centers, including the Memorial Center, plus some messages directly from the city, public health, and more, including your weather and traffic report for this upcoming weekend and a few events to keep on your radar from CFRC's events calendar. Without further delay, let's dive in. We begin tonight with an important public health reminder as much of the region continues to experience dangerously hot weather. Southeast Public Health is reminding residents to take precautions after Environment and Climate Change Canada issued an orange heat warning for parts of the Southeast Public Health region. According to the release, the current stretch of extreme heat is expected to continue through Friday, July 3rd, with the possibility of lasting into Saturday. Daytime temperatures are forecast to climb as high as 36 degrees Celsius, with humid conditions making it feel even hotter. Southeast Public Health says heat-related illnesses are preventable, but only if people take precautions before symptoms develop. Health officials warn that becoming overheated can quickly lead to dehydration, heat exhaustion, heat stroke, and in severe cases, death. Even relatively short periods of exposure to extreme heat can pose serious health risks. Residents are being urged to seek medical attention immediately if they or someone around them experiences symptoms such as nausea, dizziness, blurred vision, difficulty breathing, severe headaches, confusion, convulsions, or fever after spending time in the heat. While everyone is vulnerable during periods of extreme temperatures, public health says certain groups face greater risk. That includes infants and young children, older adults, people who are pregnant, individuals living with chronic medical conditions or mental illness, people experiencing homelessness or housing insecurity, those with limited mobility, and anyone working outdoors. To reduce the risk of heat-related illness, Southeast Public Health recommends checking in regularly with family members, neighbors, and friends, especially older adults and others who may be more vulnerable. Officials also remind residents never to leave children, adults, or pets unattended inside parked vehicles or sleeping in direct sunlight, even for a short period of time. The agency is encouraging everyone to drink plenty of water throughout the day, even before they begin to feel thirsty, and to avoid strenuous outdoor activities during the hottest hours of the afternoon whenever possible. Residents are also encouraged to wear loose, light-colored clothing, seek shade when outdoors, and take frequent breaks in air-conditioned spaces. Taking cool showers or baths, using cool wet towels, and eating foods with high water content, such as watermelon, grapes, and oranges, can also help keep body temperatures down. Public health advises limiting drinks containing caffeine, such as coffee and soft drinks, which can contribute to dehydration. The release also notes that while fans can help circulate cooler air overnight, they should not be relied upon as the primary method of cooling during prolonged periods of high heat and humidity. Residents who take medications are encouraged to speak with their doctor or pharmacist if they have questions about how extreme heat could affect them. Finally, Southeast Public Health is reminding residents to check with their local municipality for information on cooling centers and their operating hours if they need a place to escape the heat. Additional information about heat safety is available through Southeast Public Health's Extreme Temperatures webpage, and residents are encouraged to monitor the latest weather alerts through the Government of Canada's WeatherCan app. Moving into other health news tonight, the Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington Ontario Health Team says it's reached a major milestone in improving access to primary care across the region. In a release issued Tuesday, the FLA Ontario Health Team announced it has successfully cleared the entire Healthcare Connect waitlist for residents who registered before January 1, 2025, connecting thousands of people to family doctors and nurse practitioners closer to home. According to provincial data cited in the release, there were 11,240 people on the region's Healthcare Connect waitlist at the beginning of 2025. Through a coordinated effort involving local primary care providers, Ontario Health's Healthcare Connect program, and the FLA Ontario Health Team, more than 6,300 of those residents have now been attached to a family doctor or nurse practitioner. Another 4,910 people were removed from the waitlist after Healthcare Connect confirmed they had either found a provider through other means or no longer required one, helping ensure the regional waitlist accurately reflects those still seeking care. Dr. Kim Morrison, executive lead of the FLA Ontario Health Team, called the achievement an important milestone. Morrison stated, quote, "Clearing this list is a significant milestone for our region and a beautiful reflection of what happens when partners create solutions together. By working as a connected network, we've been able to achieve our vision of care close to home for thousands of our neighbors, ensuring they get the right care right in their own communities," end quote. She added that while the milestone is significant, the work continues, with the team remaining committed to ensuring every resident in the region has access to primary care. The release points to the opening of Kingston's Spruce Health Hub as one of the major contributors to that success. The hub supports family physicians across the region, helping them care for more patients while also providing temporary care services for people waiting to be formally attached to a permanent provider. According to the FLA Ontario Health Team, roughly 400 residents have already accessed temporary care through the Spruce Health Hub while waiting to be connected with a family doctor or nurse practitioner. Officials say the achievement was made possible through collaboration among numerous local healthcare providers and organizations, including family health teams, community health centers, medical clinics, municipal governments, and Ontario Health at Home's Healthcare Connect program. The release also highlights broader progress made over the last year. Between April 2025 and March 2026, the FLA Ontario Health Team exceeded its provincially funded target by connecting more than 4,250 residents to primary care, surpassing its original goal of 3,500. Overall, more than 13,000 residents across Frontenac, Lennox, and Addington were connected with family doctors or nurse practitioners during the 2024 to 25 period. Officials say residents are matched with providers based on proximity to home, clinical need, equity considerations, and available capacity at participating clinics. The Ontario Health Team says anyone in the region who does not currently have a family doctor or nurse practitioner is encouraged to register with Healthcare Connect by calling 1-800-445-1822 or by visiting the FLA Ontario Health Team's website for more information. Three of Kingston's most well-used public facilities could look very different in the years ahead. The city has begun the long-term planning process for Centre 70, the Kingston Memorial Centre, and Portsmouth Olympic Harbour. Together, the three sites host everything from hockey games and the annual fall fair to the Memorial Centre Farmers Market, sailing programs, and community events. Last week, the city's Arts, Recreation, and Community Policies Committee reviewed the first phase of what's being called the Multi-Site Visioning and Recreation Facility Capital Planning Project. This first phase lays the groundwork for what comes next, examining the condition of each property, how residents use them today, and what they want these spaces to become over the coming decades. The Memorial Center was the center of much of the conversation, with decades of effort behind protecting it for community use. Goals for the center include preserving traditions like the Fall Fair and Farmers Market, while creating new spaces that allow the site to be active year-round.
Don't think of it as an arena site in part, but this multi-use hub. I think the opportunity exists to create new spaces, new program opportunities for the fall fair. And as it relates to the farmers market, one question I think we're going to look at from a design perspective is whether or not there can be an indoor-outdoor type space that's created, perhaps along one axis of the arena, depending on the configuration of that building itself. So a pretty strong commitment, I think, to coming up with solutions for those two particular groups. And then it would follow that issues around other events in the open space, unstructured use of the park.
One of the biggest proposals in the report is a partnership with Queen's University that could see a new twin pad arena built at the Kingston Memorial Center. The idea would replace aging ice at Centre 70 while also meeting the university's varsity hockey needs. City staff told councillors those discussions are already underway.
That's the next opportunity, is working with Queens to come up with an arrangement. We expect that there will need to be some capital lease arrangement as well as an operating lease arrangement included in the facility. Of course, Queens will have other needs that are beyond the needs of just a community rink, such as dressing rooms and other training rooms and so on. And those things would all need to be considered within the lease structure. So those are the things that we've started to discuss with them, and that would be a next step.
If that partnership moves forward, it could also shape the future of Centre 70, which is expected to be decommissioned as it currently exists in the next 5 years. The site occupies a large piece of land in Kingston's West End. And while city staff say there are opportunities there, they are still determining what the options are.
Kind of said, we think 5 years could be a timeline before we completely phase out the memorial, or sorry, the Center 70 arena. However, with the commitment from Queens to work with us on a partnership and on the leasing arrangement, it may be possible to advance those things should the funding come into place. The Center 70 is an interesting site. Of course, each site is unique. But for Center 70, there could be some other strategic uses for that site coming up, and I'm not able to really articulate what is going to happen at that site at this time, or what we're proposing might happen at this time. But through the work in phase two, we'll have a better picture and be able to come back with options for you.
It will ultimately be to council through a series of recommendations to contemplate what the best use of the land at Center 70 would be following a decommissioning exercise. And I think Director Elgersma and the team really want to bring forward not only what the opportunity, but quite frankly, what the cost associated with those opportunities are against the need, and a broader landscaped approach to looking at the needs in the West End of Kingston and in considering that site's activation.
All three facilities are aging, and each faces significant investment needs over the next decade. The report estimates more than $25 million in capital requirements at the Kingston Memorial Center, and roughly $19 million at Portsmouth Olympic Harbor, while Center 70 will also require major investment if it is to remain in operation. These facilities continue to serve thousands of residents each year, but they're becoming more difficult and more expensive to maintain. And waiting too long could create challenges beyond higher repair costs.
Just feel it's necessary to put officially on record that the aging infrastructure of these properties cannot be understated, the risk that the city is increasingly taking on. We saw what happens when we lost Center 70's ice, not for reasons of the facility's condition, but actually through a water break. And, you know, if we were to lose the Memorial Center and Center 70, we would be sufficiently depleted in ice in our community. And I raise that because council consideration has to think through, you know, the investment and the phasing. We'll need to consider what would be the greater impact if we were to lose the Memorial Center's ice, for example.
The report also reflects what residents said during public consultations held earlier this year. People consistently asked for flexible community spaces, indoor recreation, walking tracks, wellness facilities, cultural programming, and outdoor gathering spaces. At the same time, many emphasized the importance of preserving the identity of places like the Memorial Center while making them more useful throughout the year. This report will be brought to Council for final approval at their upcoming meeting on Tuesday, July 7th. The project remains in its early stages. There are no final designs, approved construction timelines, or detailed cost estimates. Those pieces will come during phase two, when concepts are refined and options are brought back for public discussion and council consideration. Before we dive into more local news, let's take a look at your weather and traffic report for the rest of the week. Starting with your traffic report, in construction and delays, motorists on King Street West between Country Club Drive and Front Road can expect lane reductions as Utilities Kingston continues water and sanitary main installations. Drivers may also encounter delays on Bath Road between Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard and Portsmouth Avenue as crews install new pedestrian crossing signals. Work continues at the intersection of Montreal Street and John Counter Boulevard, with road repairs, sidewalk work, landscaping, and line painting ongoing. Motorists should also expect delays on Taylor Kidd Boulevard between Coronation Boulevard and Collins Bay Road as paving and road improvement work continues. And intermittent lane closures remain in effect on John Counter Boulevard between Portsmouth Avenue and Division through July 15th for maintenance work. In closures, Johnson Street between University and Sydenham Street will be closed daily from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. through July 10th for repaving. Aberdeen Street between Johnson and William and Barry at Queen remain closed for construction. Princess Street between Frontenac and Division Streets remains closed as part of the city's major reconstruction project. Wright Crescent between Palace Road and Kingsland Crescent remains closed for roadway repairs and pedestrian safety improvements. Sydenham Street remains closed to through traffic between Princess and Queen for the Sydenham Street Community Space Project. John Street between Montreal and Bagot remains closed through July 31st for water and sanitary service upgrades. And finally, Norman Rogers Drive between Sir John A. Macdonald Boulevard and Van Order Drive also remains closed for road rehabilitation and safety improvements. Taking a look at the forecast for tonight and the weekend, the hot and humid weather continues. Will remain mainly cloudy with a 40% chance of showers and a risk of thunderstorm before skies begin to clear near midnight tonight. Northwest winds will gust up to 50 kilometers an hour early this evening before becoming light, and temperatures will only fall to a warm overnight low of 22 degrees. Friday brings another summer scorcher with a mix of sun and cloud and a 30% chance of showers. The daytime high once again reaches 33 degrees, so expect another hot and humid day. Friday night sees cloudy periods with a low of 21. Saturday offers more of the same with a mix of sun and cloud, a 30% chance of showers, and a high of 30 degrees. Clouds linger overnight with a low of 19. By Sunday, temperatures ease just a touch with a mix of sun and cloud and a high of 29 degrees. Sunday night will bring cloudy periods and an overnight low of 18. That's what's incoming this weekend. Keep the sunscreen handy, stay hydrated, and keep an eye on the forecast. This has been your quick weather and traffic report. Now let's jump back to more local news. Moving into some messages directly from the City of Kingston this evening, the city says it has strengthened its municipal enforcement capabilities with the launch of a new municipal special constable program. In a release issued this week, the city announced that 8 members of its licensing and enforcement services department were officially sworn in as municipal special constables. During a ceremony held on Monday, June 29th, the newly appointed special constables include 6 enforcement supervisors and 2 members of the department's leadership team. According to the city, the new program is designed to improve the city's ability to respond to non-criminal enforcement issues on municipal property, while providing additional support to bylaw officers working in the field. The municipal special constables will begin carrying out their new responsibilities this month, alongside their existing supervisor roles within licensing and enforcement services. The city says the additional designation provides enhanced authority in situations that go beyond the scope of traditional bylaw enforcement, but do not require a police response. Officials say the program is intended to improve the city's overall enforcement response, while helping frontline bylaw officers manage more complex situations on municipal property. In the release, Kyle Campo, Director of Licensing and Enforcement Services for the city, says, quote, "The swearing in of these municipal special constables marks an important milestone for the city's enforcement team. We are proud to stand alongside city bylaw officers and provide additional resources and authority when issues come up that are beyond the scope of bylaw enforcement," end quote. The city notes that municipal special constables are focused specifically on non-criminal matters occurring on municipal property and are intended to complement, not replace, the work of Kingston Police or existing bylaw enforcement officers. City officials say additional information about the Municipal Special Constable Program, including the officer's authorities, responsibilities, and oversight structure, is available through the city's website. The City of Kingston is looking for local artists, performers, community groups, and vendors to help showcase the city's cultural diversity this fall. In a release issued this week, the city announced it is now accepting expressions of interest for the 2026 Intercultural Arts Festival and Welcome to Kingston Fair. The annual event is scheduled for Sunday, September 20th at Confederation Park. According to the city, the Intercultural Arts Festival celebrates the many cultures, traditions, and communities that make up Kingston through a day of performances, food, art, and cultural exchange. This year's festival will once again be combined with the city's Welcome to Kingston Fair, which connects newcomers with local organizations, services, and community resources while helping residents build new connections. The festival is organized by the city's Arts and Culture Services Department and Special Events Office in partnership with an Ethno-Cultural Community Planning Committee, as well as the city's Community Development, Well-being, and IIDEA Department and Equity, Diversity, and Inclusion Office. In the release, Megan Surrett, Manager of Events and Programs in Arts and Culture Services, said, quote, "The Intercultural Arts Festival reflects the diverse cultures and voices that make Kingston such a vibrant community. We invite community groups, artists, and vendors to share their traditions, talents, and stories, and help create a welcoming and dynamic experience for all," end quote. The city is inviting applications from a wide range of participants. That includes cultural pavilions representing different traditions and communities, artisan vendors, food vendors, community organizations wishing to share information about their programs and services, and performers specializing in music, dance, theater, storytelling, and other artistic disciplines. City officials say participants will be selected with input from the festival's Ethnocultural Community Planning Committee. Selections will be based on how well applicants align with the festival's goals of celebrating cultural diversity, encouraging community connection, and creating an engaging and inclusive experience for attendees, while also considering the practical needs of the event site. The city is encouraging interested community members and organizations to submit an expression of interest by Monday, July 13th at 5 p.m. More information about the festival and the application process is available through the City of Kingston's website. Before we wrap up this evening, I'm going to run through your weekend forecast, a roundup of just some of the events Kingston has to offer to finish off your week. This selection comes from CFRC's community events calendar curated by our community news and arts coordinator, Jenny Hinch. After tonight's show, you can put your knowledge to the test with music trivia at Something in the Water Brewing, trivia night at Riverhead Brewing, or a trivia at Spearhead Brewing, all starting at 7 p.m. At dusk, Springer Market Square hosts a free outdoor screening of The Devil Wears Prada. Later in the evening, karaoke gets underway at Jersey's at 8:30, The Buckle at 9, and the weekly urban music social starts at La Vida Bistro at 9:30. Friday features the Airwave YGK songwriting workshop with Savannah Shea at CFRC beginning at 11 a.m. Then at noon, the A-Game Expo 2026 kicks off at Slush Puppy Place, bringing together gaming, esports, cosplay, and exhibitors from across the region. Friday night wraps up with karaoke at both The Buckle and Deft Brewing starting at 9 p.m. Saturday starts with the Kingston Public Market at Springer Market Square from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. Families can stop by the Kids Creativity Club at the Tet Center from 10 until noon. And the A-Game Expo returns to Slush Puppy Place at noon for another full day of gaming and cosplay. In the evening, line dancing gets underway at The Buckle starting at 7 p.m. On Sunday, the Memorial Center Farmers Market runs from 9 a.m. until 2 p.m., always a crowd favorite, offering local produce, baked goods, and artisan vendors. The final day of the A-Game Expo begins at noon at Slush Puppy Place, and the weekend wraps up with karaoke at The Merchants starting at 9 p.m. Whether you're a trivia buff, movie fan, gamer, or just looking to spend some time at one of Kingston's markets, there's something happening all weekend long. That wraps up your weekend forecast. Once again, that was just some of the events Kingston has to offer this weekend. Be sure to head to CFRC.ca for our full events listings. If you have an event or concert you'd like to add to our online or on-air calendar, reach out today via CFRC.ca or at CFRC Music on Instagram using the link tree in our bio. That is all things current in Kingston for this week. Thank you for listening to CFRC's local news programming brought to you by the generous support of the Community Radio Fund of Canada under the Local Journalism Initiative, Queen's University Career Services, and for our podcast, Smith Engineering at Queen's University. To revisit episodes and listen on the go, head to our podcast network at podcast.cfrc.ca. As you head into the weekend, enjoy the sunshine, stay hydrated in the heat, and be sure to stay tuned for more CFRC programming coming up next.
Thank you for listening to this podcast produced at CFRC 101.9 FM at Queen's University, situated on the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Haudenosaunee peoples, and brought to you by the generous support of the Faculty of Engineering and Applied Science.